Welcome. Usually our December program features the Gilead graduation program held in September of each year. However, the 149th class of Gilead was scheduled to arrive in the United States when the COVID-19 pandemic was underway. Therefore, that class was postponed. So this month, we'll focus on being the best Bible teachers we can be. Here are a few highlights. Cecilio and Shira made many sacrifices to help their students become dedicated worshipers of Jehovah. We'll see the impact they had on Mercedes and Abel. The arrival of a baby brings great joy as well as new challenges. We'll learn how Jehovah helps first-time parents adjust to their new responsibilities. And we'll learn how Louise Blanton's parents prepared her for a satisfying life in Jehovah's service. This is JW Broadcasting for December 2020. My comments this month are drawn from 1 Corinthians 3:10. Let each one keep watching how he is building. Building? Are we talking about the upcoming construction of a facility for headquarters departments in Ramapo, New York? Or are we referring to the building of new kingdom halls in your country? Well, as important as those building projects are, my comments are directed to an even more important building work. Let's look at the context in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 in verse 5. Apollos and Paul are mentioned by name, and what was their specific role identified to be? Verse 5 says, "Ministers through whom you became believers." Apollos and Paul had taught the scriptures to many in Corinth. In verses 6 through 9, Paul likens this teaching activity to the planting of a field. Seeds of truth are planted in the heart of a person. By means of return visits and Bible studies, the seeds are watered. But if the person is receptive, then with Jehovah's Spirit and blessing, the truth will blossom and grow to the point of dedication and baptism. Did you notice in verse 9, Bible teachers are described as God's fellow workers? What an awesome privilege we have to assist Jehovah in gathering the precious things of all the nations. So we now know the topic of these verses in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. It's discussing Bible teachers who help others to become believers. But did you also notice that in verse 9, Paul changes illustrations? He said, "You are God's field under cultivation." That's agricultural. But then he changes the analogy, saying, "God's building." That's architectural. That's construction. Why the change in illustrations? The building analogy highlights a specific point. You see, the illustration of the farmer doesn't focus on the farmer's impact on the growth of a plant. In that illustration, the farmer waters the seedling, but it's God that makes the plant grow. However, the illustration of building or construction focuses on the builder's involvement or the Bible teacher's involvement. The one constructing a building has considerable influence over the quality of the end product. What kind of materials does he select? Is he thorough in his work? Or does he cut corners to get the job done faster or with less effort? Now let's read the 10th verse of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. According to the undeserved kindness of God that was given to me, I laid a foundation as a skilled master builder, but someone else is building on it. But let each one keep watching how he is building on it. There in Corinth, Paul, as a master builder, had initially acquainted many with the truth. In effect, he laid a foundation for others to build on. But what was that foundation? Verse 11 says, "For no one can lay any other foundation than what is laid, which is Jesus Christ." Paul had helped establish the congregation there in Corinth based on the teachings of Jesus, the foundation of the truth. Building on that foundation, others would become Bible teachers and help still others to progress toward baptism. That is why Paul cautioned in verse 10 to keep watching how we build. We can affect the outcome. So to all of us Bible teachers, including parents, we ask the question, how are we building on the foundation? Why does it really matter? Let's read verses 12 and 13. "Now if anyone builds on the foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, each one's work will be shown for what it is, for the day will show it up, because it will be revealed by means of fire, and the fire itself will prove what sort of work each one has built." Do we understand how important it is to analyze our teaching techniques? Will we use the best techniques possible to reach our student or our child's heart? Or do we just try to get by with the bare essentials? In effect, a half-hearted effort using hay or straw, as it were. Some years ago, in one developing country, during an economic boom, it became a priority to build more and more schools. Unfortunately, building requirements and materials were substandard. Well, what happened when a 7.9 magnitude earthquake hit one of the areas? Many schools in the earthquake zone crumbled, while buildings around them remained standing. An official report indicated that over 5,000 students died. Think about it. Prior to the earthquake, schools were in session, and everything seemed fine. Students and faculty were coming and going on a daily basis. But the unforeseen earthquake proved that the building methods used were not of the quality needed to prevent collapse and terrible carnage. 1 Corinthians 3:13 makes clear that how we build spiritually when teaching Bible students or our children is just as important. Now, notice the sobering point made in verses 14 and 15. "If anyone's work that he has built on it remains, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved. Yet, if so, it will be as through fire." The point in verse 14 is that if we're conscientious and reach the heart of our Bible students, that may be what gives them the needed fortitude to withstand an unexpected trial. In that case, our diligent work remains. Then verse 15 makes the point that if our teaching techniques were inconsistent or were in some way slipshod, our student may not successfully weather a fire or stormy trial in his life. We personally may survive, but we might suffer the loss of the one we studied with, whether a Bible student or our own child. That's why Paul is highlighting the need to be the best Bible teacher we personally can be. However, we should mention that if a person who progresses to dedication and baptism later leaves the truth, it's not necessarily the responsibility of the Bible teacher. The teacher may have been very diligent and used the best of spiritual building materials, but the student or child may not have responded from his heart, or possibly he allowed human imperfection or temptation to cause him to deviate from the way. But the takeaway point from 1 Corinthians chapter 3 is to do our best to build in our students or children fire-resistant materials. We want them to remain, to endure the tests that are sure to come their way. What might be likened to building with inferior materials when studying the Bible with someone? Possibly, we initially arouse a person's interest by telling him about the hope of everlasting life in paradise. That's indeed scriptural. But is that in itself building in such a way that the person will survive a fiery trial of faith in the future? What if our teaching consisted solely of saying, if you want to live forever in paradise, you must study, go to the meetings, and share in the preaching work? If so, we are not building in a way to ensure that the student or child will resist the fire of trials or stand the test of time. In effect, we're using wood, hay, or straw. Do you remember that Paul said we are to build on the foundation? He said the foundation is Jesus Christ. That is solid. Ephesians chapter 3, 16 and 17 helps us to understand what it means to build with quality materials such as gold, silver, and precious stones. In verse 16, it makes clear that there's a way that we can be made mighty in the person we are inside. Let's read verse 17. And that through your faith you may have the Christ dwell in your hearts with love. May you be rooted and established on the foundation. How can we help our child or Bible student become strong or mighty spiritually? Interestingly, verse 17 said that it's by having the Christ dwell in your hearts. Not just knowing Jesus in the head, but sounding his teachings and personality down into our student's heart. It means to know Jesus so well that it's as if he lives or dwells inside of us and motivates us as Christians. The result, verse 17 concluded by saying that the student would become rooted and established on the foundation. Yes, solidly grounded on Jesus Christ. And Hebrews 1:3 says that Jesus is the reflection of God's glory and the exact representation of his very being. Jesus himself said, "No one comes to the Father except through me." So building with fire-resistant materials means helping the student to love Jesus, yes, but also having a close, loving relationship with Jehovah God himself. But why are we considering the theme, "Keep watching how you are building now"? Why is this more urgent than ever before? It's because all indications, scripturally and circumstantially, point to Satan's evil system of things coming to an abrupt end. The physical indications of Matthew chapter 24 and the bizarre temperament described in 2 Timothy 3:1 through 5 become more and more precise as we watch the scene of this world unfold. We can expect even more opposition and persecution from those who are opposed to our resolve to stand on the side of Jehovah. Our brothers in Russia and other lands are experiencing this now. Some have been beaten and brutalized in other ways. As we've heard, others have been sentenced to years in prison. In recent years, the organization has reminded us of what we can expect as the Great Tribulation begins. Do you remember this video clip from the Pursue What Builds Loyalty video series shown at the 2016 Regional Convention? Be reminded.
And your faith has led you here as loyal servants of Jehovah, confident that Psalm 97, verse 10, applies to you personally. Jehovah is guarding the lives of his loyal ones.
Where are they? Check the basement. Shut that door.
That video series has been affectionately called the basement video. It was depicting one possible scenario that could be considered a fire, according to 1 Corinthians 3:13. The serious question we want to ask ourselves is, would my Bible student or child be in the basement with those other faithful brothers and sisters? If not, would the reason be because of his own lack of faith? Or might it at least in part be because we did not take our responsibility as a teacher seriously enough? Did we build with fire-resistant materials or, in effect, with hay or straw? The same verse said, "For the day will show it up. The fire itself will prove what sort of work each one has built." It's a sobering thought, isn't it? If you recall in the May 2020 JW Broadcasting Monthly program, Brother Lett addressed the concern a few parents have expressed about some of our videos that depict biblical or modern-day situations. In these, at times, true worshipers are depicted as having their faith tested as if by fire. The concern expressed is that some scenes could have an effect on children who've been protected from all negative circumstances on TV, including daily news reports of catastrophes being faced by real people. The basement scene we just reviewed was one of our videos that produced such a reaction. Another one was the reenactment of the Bible account depicting Jehovah's saving acts in the time of King Hezekiah. It was shown at the 2016 Regional Convention, and the video is entitled, "O Jehovah, I Trust in You." Let's look again at that portrayal of Jehovah's saving acts. If a parent has shielded his child from viewing all scenes on the news or other visual images depicting negative realities, it's understandable that there may be a concern. However, as Brother Letts stated, parents need to give their children a realistic idea of what we will face in the near future. Many parents choose to help their children appreciate the graphic visual imagery of a Bible-based account while at the same time building trust in Jehovah, who will be with them in times of distress. The point is, friends, the Bible warns us, young and old alike, that a time of fiery testing looms on the horizon. We want to be realistic and face these events with faith and courage. Our videos depict such circumstances in a tasteful and sanitized way, not showing any actual acts of bloodshed or violence. Be assured that the governing body is not trying to scare anyone. Instead, we are trying to prepare everyone. We feel responsible to fortify the brotherhood by using fire-resistant building materials in the spirit of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. As teachers of the Word of God, may we all give prayerful thought to the methods, techniques, and the diligence we display when conducting Bible studies. We're motivated by the very Spirit of Jehovah God. The words at 2 Peter 3:9 come to mind. Of Jehovah it says, "He does not desire anyone to be destroyed, but desires all to attain to repentance." May that be our resolve as we take to heart the inspired words of 1 Corinthians 3:10, "Let each one keep watching how he is building." Having children is one of the greatest joys in life and one of the greatest responsibilities Jehovah entrusts to a husband and wife. In the following dramatization, notice how the arrival of a baby changes a marriage and how Jehovah helps first-time parents.
Jehovah has been so good to us.
We enjoy a busy life full of blessings.
Including one we didn't expect.
We love our little Emma so much. But child rearing was harder than we thought.
Most days went well. Others, not so much.
I just need some rest.
When will things be back to normal? I wake with every little cry.
I wake when she's silent.
Am I doing this right?
I should check on them.
Any time to ourselves was time to do nothing. Fatigue was affecting our relationship with Jehovah.
And each other.
We were so relieved when David, a father himself, offered to visit with another elder. We read Isaiah 40:29. He gives power to the tired one and full might to those lacking strength.
As a loving father, Jehovah wants parents to succeed. So he gives us what we need to recharge us.
Things might never be like they were before, but his suggestions helped us create a practical and consistent spiritual routine.
David said it's normal for new parents to feel anxious, and anxiety is tiring. So we pray for a calm heart.
And extra kindness when tired, so we can keep working as a team.
I so appreciate Zach's help.
And I'm sacrificing some unnecessary things to put spiritual things first.
There will always be a lot to do. But when Emma sleeps, I feed my faith and rest.
Our new spiritual routine is invigorating. Jehovah helped us to understand. While life in the system may have many challenges, putting spiritual things first will give us the strength to meet them.
That new father wanted life to get back to normal, but all parents realize that having children creates a new normal. If you are first-time parents, please remember, one of the most important adjustments you'll make is to establish a new spiritual routine for yourselves and your precious little child. Of course, children grow, and when they cross into their teenage years, suddenly everything seems to change. In the following video, notice how Rudy and Anita Garcia were determined to teach their daughters Jehovah's ways and the results they experienced.
We already had our firstborn, Renita, and then I was told that we were going to have twins. Yeah, we were new in the truth and inexperienced. So I was saying to myself, how could I take care of my children? Not only physically, but more so spiritually. I would be able to teach them to love Jehovah, to worship Jehovah. And 1 Corinthians 3:10 shows us the importance of raising a family by using good quality materials.
So having a spiritual routine is very important for the children.
my wife and I would have to lay a good spiritual foundation. We would have to set a good example for our children.
As long as I could remember, I would always see my parents studying, doing personal Bible study.
I remember Dad, one time he came to us in the living room and he said, "You know, I was reading Psalm 1, verse 2, where it said, we should find delight in the law of Jehovah and read in an undertone day and night." He said, "What if we do this as a family project, like we read the Bible every day out loud together?"
And my parents were very simple. You know, they didn't really require a lot of fancy things. They were content.
Mom and Dad always worked part-time. Dad pioneered. So money was limited. Sometimes the car we had wasn't the most reliable, and it would break down right before the meeting.
I remember when our car broke down. Initially, I thought, oh, we're not going to go to the meeting.
Mom and Dad would say, "Well, the car broke down. There's a meeting tonight, so let's walk."
So there's the five of us, my dad in his suit. The four women would be with our dresses, our book bags. And so that taught me not to let obstacles, anxieties prevent me from going to my meetings. Spending quality time was very important to my parents. And especially after the meetings, we would change into our pajamas, grab a snack, go to the living room, and just start talking about how our day went, how the meeting went. Just those special moments, it brought us closer together.
I saw that Dad, no matter how busy he was, he would drop what he was doing and look at me and talk. I knew I was more important to him than what he was doing.
I remember a time when I had a crush on a boy. My parents reasoned with me. I felt very comfortable, you know, after that point to maybe talk about other things, because I could see that my parents were not going to be angry at me. You know, they're going to listen to me and what I was feeling.
One of the blessings that Mom and Dad gave me was teaching me how to think and meditate on scriptures.
They encouraged us to set full-time service or pioneering as a goal. We all worked part-time, me and my siblings. And I remember one close family friend said to me, "You know, your parents are getting older. You know, you're their daughter, and you should probably work full-time. That way they have more of an easy life." After that sister's conversation, I almost gave up on pioneering. But I knew deep down that my parents would not be happy about that. They wanted us to spend our youth in serving Jehovah.
My husband and I were invited to attend the 145th class of Gilead, and that was like a dream come true. I have to thank my parents for that, because they always supported me through the years. I couldn't have done it without them. And for that, I'll be forever grateful.
I really do thank my parents for the upbringing that they gave me. I have a very happy life. I'm thankful that I was able to avoid a lot of heartache. And that's because my parents raised me in the truth and Jehovah's way.
Children are born imitators, and they're gonna imitate our example.
I want to thank Jehovah for what our family is now.
To see all of us in the pioneer work, all five of us are pioneering. Thank you, Jehovah.
Raising three daughters took years of work and sacrifice. But Rudy and Nanita are joyful, knowing their daughters are happily serving Jehovah full time. Likewise, if we build in our children fire-resistant materials, then we give them everything they need to make wise decisions themselves. This was the case for Louise Blanton. Notice how her parents' building techniques helped her to choose a fulfilling life.
My family started studying with Witnesses in New Jersey My parents had been very diligent in helping us to appreciate not only Bible principles, but characters in the Bible that could be a role model for us. It helped us to know that Jehovah cared not only for adult publishers, but for the children that were serving him. When you went out in the ministry, it became such a common thing. The police would come and pick you up. If they couldn't track down the parents, they would put the children in jail, knowing that eventually the parents would have to come looking for them. The police would use scare tactics that said, there's rats in the cell. Is that where you want to be? Anything to make you fearful, to intimidate you, to tell them where your parents were. They'd put us in the jail, and in order to build our faith, we would sing. We didn't have Kingdom Melodies back then, so we used to make up songs, and that would keep us focused on what we were doing there. After I reached the age of 18, my parents were agreeable to my accepting an assignment. And in those years, because of the racial issue in the South, there were so many areas in the South where they didn't have Kingdom Halls that the colored could attend. So if you were free and you would accept an assignment, the society usually sent us to the South. My parents were both born in the South, so they were able to tell us what to expect to keep the culture shock from being so great. I was assigned to Pioneer in Andalusia, Alabama, based on all of the matters that pertain to integration and segregation. This was a hotbed for testing those issues. And so I was concerned about whether I had the fiber just to work under those circumstances. The field was wide open. There were so many in the area that had no knowledge of Jehovah's Witnesses and very receptive to the message. That part of our ministry was very rewarding. We had some very strong and helpful brothers that Jehovah was using to get his people, no matter what color, to get them to appreciate him and his purpose. When you focus on these things, the suggestions and the ideas that the brothers would help you to appreciate how to deal with issues, they taught us, for one thing, the whole purpose of the Ku Klux Klan is to intimidate. They feel that if they frighten you enough, you will leave. Satan has always used methods to try to intimidate, but we would make it a practice to stay, to hold our place. We were in street work, we'd stay right there. And of course, as they passed, they had their remarks to make, but we just stood there. When I think back on my youth, there isn't anything that I was able to participate in that I came to regret. There were always blessings that went along with it. You make yourself available, Jehovah will use you. Jehovah is always there as a support. There isn't anything that he directs his organization to do that doesn't receive his support. So if we are challenged with a new assignment, or if we feel inadequate about it, if we look to Jehovah, with Jehovah you can't fail.
Louise's parents taught her to appreciate principles and characters in the Bible. That reached her heart and aided Louise to endure difficult trials. She has now spent over 50 years of her life in the full-time service, including over 40 years in Bethel service. Hard work and sacrifice may also be needed to help our Bible students to become disciples. We'll see that in our next video.
A teacher should always help his or her student to develop love for Jehovah. That's the best foundation to build on.
For me, it's important that they see Jehovah as a real person.
In order to help them build a good foundation, they need to know that Jehovah gave us the Bible so that we can receive His guidance for the future and for eternity.
I'm so thankful for my Bible teacher. She always helped me see Jehovah's point of view on things from the Bible.
I'll never stop thanking Jehovah for what He's done for me. He drew me to the truth. He gave me a teacher that didn't just teach me about the Bible, but by His example, the brother taught me how to really be one of Jehovah's Witnesses.
When I started studying, my parents told me that they didn't consider me their daughter anymore. During the study, my teacher helped me see from the Bible that Jehovah had a lot of really good things in store for me.
My environment was very hostile before. My problem was that my wife and I argued a lot and I had a bad temper. The brother's advice really helped us to keep calm when we had problems.
When a person starts getting to know Jehovah and they learn and apply Bible truths in their lives, the people who were their friends before are going to disappear. We need to give them that friendship they're losing. We've had to make some sacrifices for our students, but when we think about the blessings, we can barely remember the sacrifices.
I worked full-time, but I had to adapt to the students' needs, not the other way around. Sometimes I would be up at 6 o'clock in the morning conducting a Bible study.
Sometimes things come up and you can't make it, but the study should still happen. Another brother can study with him if we're not going to be there. When someone starts studying, it can feel like a lot. The Bible itself has 66 books. So for example, you can suggest that the student start reading a few verses every day and then add a little more every week.
So that is how we see them progress. You get to see them practice what they're learning, really following the Bible's counsel in their lives. We don't just conduct a study, see them progress, get baptized, and then say, okay, see you later. It doesn't work like that. They become part of our life.
He's been my friend since before I got baptized. It's been about 28 years now.
Years ago, my former student Abel had a really difficult time. His wife got sick. Although we were far away when we heard about it, we kept in touch with him.
Thank you, Livingston family, for calling Jessica during these hard times.
It's very encouraging
to us.
I know that you love us, and we also love you very much. You are an example in true worship for us. May Jehovah continue caring for you and blessing you.
I got baptized 34 years ago and have been pioneering for 33 years. My Bible teacher was Shara. She was diagnosed with cancer.
When I got sick, Jehovah used Mercedes to help me. After all this time, since I helped her learn the truth, now she comforts me.
It's a father-son relationship.
At some point, maybe this student will help me.
And we can say that we're good-for-nothing slaves and we have done what we ought to have done. And they keep loving and serving Jehovah. What's better than that?
To expand their ministry, many Jehovah's Witnesses have learned a new language. Have you? Teaching someone the truth in the language of their heart can be rewarding. But learning to speak and think in a new language can also be tough. In a recent morning worship, Brother William Malenfant offered some practical suggestions.
Usually, the language that we learn from infancy becomes the language of the heart. And we learn it at home. In most cases, the dominant influence in our life in connection with our language of heart, or the first language, is our mother. And that's precisely what took place in Israel in the days of Nehemiah. But the mothers in this case were pagans, sharing their language and probably their beliefs with their children. And a lot of Jewish men, prominent Jewish men, had married pagan women. Let's read the scripture together at Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 23 and 24. Nehemiah 13, 23 and 24. It says, "In those days I also saw Jews who had married Ashdodite, Ammonite, and Moabite women. Half of their sons were speaking Ashdodite and the language of the different peoples, but none of them knew how to speak the language of the Jews." And as was stated, it's very likely that those mothers would be teaching the children about their land, their culture, and their worship, the pagan gods they worshiped. And so the decision was made by the Jews themselves when they were counseled and given direction from Ezra and from Nehemiah to send those wives away along with the children. And that's an interesting thing. It must have been a bit difficult for some husbands to see their children sent away, but all they knew were the languages of the pagan wives, nothing about Hebrew and the worship of Jehovah God. And the problem was, is they were sent away to keep the Jews from losing their identity by a gradual assimilation into the cultures and the religions of the surrounding nations that those wives belonged to. In Nehemiah's day, speaking Hebrew was vital. And we're grateful it's not necessary today. We all don't have to learn Hebrew. But in his wisdom, Jehovah invites people who speak any language to learn the pure language, the truth about him and his purposes. And you know, it's like the opposite of what took place at the Tower of Babel, where Jehovah intervened, confused the builders of the Tower of Babel, imposing upon them different languages, including different ways of thinking. And so they went off, disorganized, separating from one another. And today we have people from all over the world who speak many, many different languages, but in Jehovah's wisdom, he's bringing them all together, those who love the truth and love him, in unity. And this is what Zephaniah says, Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 9. It speaks of the pure language. "I shall give to peoples the change to a pure language, in order for them all to call upon the name of Jehovah." And that's what these people do who speak other languages. We reach them with the truth, but then they're unified with Jehovah's organization, because it goes on to say, "in order to serve him shoulder to shoulder." So isn't that interesting? The way Jehovah has used the pure language to bring people of many diverse backgrounds and languages together in his worship. In our days, people of many different languages are leaving their home countries to live elsewhere. And it's really quite amazing when you consider large cities are filled with people of different languages. And even little villages, we find people speaking different languages. They need help to learn the truth in the language of their heart. It's interesting to note about Bethelites how many have learned other languages in order to teach the truth to people. In the United States, Bethel, in our branch, there are over 2,500 Bethelites who are engaged in congregations, 24 different language groups and congregations. So a lot of Bethelites and commuters are included in those numbers, are doing a very fine work in helping people in the territory to learn the truth. And wouldn't it be nice? I know some of us would love to learn some other languages. Wouldn't it be lovely if we could learn the way a child does? They just absorb it. No effort, and they start speaking it. A researcher, Dr. John Brearley, says this: clearly, the young brain seems to be programmed almost like a computer for language development. He notes that even brain anatomy suggests that an infant is born with a pre-programmed biological capacity to speak. And then the comment in Awake said, it's as though the brain is hardwired to learn language. I'm sorry to say that as the years go by, the hardwiring starts to fray a bit in many of us. But if we make the effort, and we do make a switch to a congregation where they speak the language where you would like to learn, remember this: children can be a big help in the congregation that you attend in a foreign language. They can also be very startling and frank. You speak funny. Why can't you pronounce that word properly? It's so easy. Well, yes, to you it's easy. You were raised with it. But that's how kids are. They don't realize the difficulties we have as we get older with the grooves being so deep and so thick in the brain with our original language that it's hard to get out of those grooves with vowels and consonants that we're not used to saying in a certain order. Keep a sense of humor. Listen to the kids. They'll help you. And don't be overly concerned about speaking a new language without an accent. Everybody has an accent, one way or another. Some are more agreeable than others, but everyone has that. So, and some don't want to admit it, but they really do. They have an accent. Even when we all speak the same language, you can tell where a person is from, whether it's east, north, west, whatever it may be, south. There are accents or intonations, the way words are pronounced. I remember years gone by for missionaries who were sent out into the field. We had to follow a special program in learning a new language. Your first month in your new assignment, you had to study 11 hours a day for 30 days, your first month, your new language. Well, you felt like you were in the Tower of Babel on those occasions because it was very difficult. The second month, you had to study your new language 4 hours a day and be out preaching 130 hours. Your third month, 150 hours in the field ministry and study language as you can. For those who are striving to learn a new language, here are a few suggestions I gleaned from Awake of March 2007 and the January issue of 2000. There are 4 points. 1, motivation. 2, humility. 3, patience. 4, practice. Motivation. You need an incentive, a reason to pursue your goal. Because if you have a high level of motivation, you're going to be more successful. Well, we have the best motivation there is. Teach people the truth. Praise our God, Jehovah. Build up the congregation we've chosen to attend. What about humility? Well, don't expect too much of yourself when you start learning a new language. Mistakes are inevitable. And if you wait until you can speak it perfectly before you start making comments or give a talk, you may be waiting quite a while. Be prepared, because it may not be until after Armageddon that you achieve that goal. So don't be afraid to make mistakes and carry on with your new language. Patience. A brother stated, "For me, the first 2 years were difficult, and at times I felt like giving up. Still," he acknowledges, "it does get easier as time goes by, and it gets enjoyable." And 4, practice. A regular routine will help you to become fluent in your new language. Try to practice every day, even if it's for just a few minutes. There's an interesting saying, as one textbook puts it: a little and often is preferable to a lot but seldom. So be steady, even for short periods of time, in practicing the new language. Now, the fact is that most Bethelites in our branch are serving in the English language field. and they are truly a blessing to the congregations. The brothers are happy to have Bethelites who take the lead, who give of themselves, and work hard to build up the congregation. So the decision to serve in an English congregation or with a different language group is highly personal. Whatever the decision may be, there's a key factor that we all have to keep in mind to maintain our spirituality at a high level and giving our Bethel assignment our best. And that key factor that we have to keep in mind is to focus on the one language that counts the most, the pure language that Jehovah God has given to his people.
As we noted earlier, we can expect stormy tests and trials to come our way. But if we've built fire-resistant materials in our children, our students, and ourselves, we will stand firm. We'll see that in our beautiful new music video.
First time I heard the word of truth about Jehovah in a world that is new. Love grew in my heart right up to this day. But I know this world wants to pull me away. Oh, I want to do what is right. I'll keep building my faith so I can be strong. I will not give up or give in. His word as my guide, I'll follow each day. I'll pray. Choose where we will stand. A life built on rock, or one built on sand. This world around us wants us to believe that we'll stand forever, so live and be free.
What an encouraging song. And to further help you stand firm against trials, a new video will be released later this month entitled Firm Under Opposition. This 10-minute video consists of segments from two previous documentaries that touched the hearts of many. Jehovah's Witnesses stand firm against Nazi assault and faithful under trials. Jehovah's Witnesses in the Soviet Union. So please look for this video that combines the highlights of the two previous programs. It will strengthen and help you remain faithful to Jehovah. The theme of this month's program was, let each one keep watching how he is building. We saw how first-time parents can successfully embrace their new responsibilities. By setting a good example, Rudy and Anita helped their three daughters reach meaningful spiritual goals. Louise received fine training from her parents, which has helped her to enjoy a fulfilling life. Cecilio and Shara made sacrifices to be effective Bible teachers, and their efforts made a real difference in the lives of their students. Before we close, let's visit our brothers and sisters in Nigeria. Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa. It's some 200 million people speak over 500 languages. More than 400,000 Jehovah's Witnesses live and preach there. Many publishers come from other lands to share in the ministry. The response to the good news is very encouraging. More than 870,000 Bible studies are conducted every month. On average, about 40 people are baptized every day, and 7 new congregations are formed every month. This is the Obudu Ranch Congregation. Their territory is beautiful, vast, and mountainous, literally in the clouds. 23 publishers, including 2 special pioneers, serve here. To reach areas only accessible by foot, the publishers sometimes walk for 8 hours. The terrain is challenging, but the long walk provides opportunities for upbuilding association. After working the territory, our brothers stay overnight and walk back another 8 hours. Our brothers and sisters in the Obudu Ranch congregation send their warm love and greetings. From the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, this is JW Broadcasting.